When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hello, hi, and welcome. I am your host, Emma Gunnar Wardner, and in my nearly 20-year career as a beauty and health writer, I have interviewed a lot of people. Supermodels, entrepreneurs, authors, celebrities, and doctors. And many of these conversations had a real impact on me, and I'd come away feeling inspired, excited, informed, and really empowered. And at the back of my mind, I'd always think, I wish I could just publish the tape so people could really feel that conversation. Well, on this podcast, you get to feel the conversation. I talk with experts, guests, and a few friends who I hope will inspire, inform, and empower you, and maybe also challenge you, whether you're looking for self-help, self-improvement, beauty advice, health insights, business know-how, or just some good old-fashioned life advice and a bit of a laugh. It's all here. Welcome to the show. Hello, hi, and welcome to a reloaded episode of The Emma Gunn Show. Thank you so much for joining me. Now, if you are following me on Instagram, then you will, I think, understand why I am resharing this episode of the podcast with Emma Story Gordon, because she came on the podcast to talk about fitness, body image, body positivity, diet culture, the ways in which we are toxically affected by diet, the real deal when it comes to wanting to lose weight, if indeed that is a goal. And trust me, her advice is incredible. And I was so taken with everything that she said and the compassion that she has as well towards anyone struggling in this area, that I sort of followed her incredibly closely after the fact. I really enjoyed chatting to her. I really liked her. And then I started to really engage with her content, and it was amazing. And so at the beginning of 2022, I signed up for her The EC Method, which is a coaching program she runs with fellow fitness trainer and nutrition expert, Chloe Madeley. I found that course 8 weeks, and I did it twice. So I did January, February, March, and April. I found it to be so unbelievably helpful for my training. My body has definitely changed. I am building muscle and it feels freaking amazing. I understood my nutrition so much better. It was a big shift, actually. I was aware of my macros, but not in a way that's scary or intimidating before you think, oh gosh, in a way that's actually really accessible and achievable. And additionally, it's just the effect it's had on my mindset. There was always underpinning all of my efforts towards changing my body in a way that would make me feel more comfortable living in it. There was always an element of panic sort of in the background of you're so close to, I don't know, self-sabotaging behaviors again, or it could all go because I had been on this cycle where I did lose it, where I did lose my momentum and I did regress. I always feared it was coming back. And what the EC method has really done is help me not do that. So it's something that I would like to share far and wide. Anyway, I met Emma in person for the first time this week. And just chatting to her, we went for a long walk along the river in London. We had a bit of a sit down, we had a chat, and it was one of the easiest conversations I've ever had with someone who I have quote unquote never met before. She's just an excellent human being and her insight's incredible. And I just thought, oh God, I'm so lucky that I got to actually just hang out one-on-one with her. That episode that we did was so great. I'm going to reshare it. So that's why I am resharing it. And if you have ever felt conflicted or have struggled with anything to do with your body image, the food that you want to eat or think you should be eating, or any of those things, I really feel as though Emma is a very, very sensible, compassionate voice with so much expertise to back up everything she says. Like, she takes the science into account, she takes the emotions into account, which I think is such a valuable and not often heard perspective. So I'm really glad to reshare this again. The links to Emma will of course be in the show notes, and the links to the EC method too, because trust me, I love it. I will probably go back to it at some point when I feel like I need to, if I have a goal that I decide to set myself, I will absolutely go back. I trust Emma and Chloe implicitly. I think their advice is absolutely brilliant. So I'll put all of the links to that in the show notes. But here she is. It's a reloaded episode with Emma Story Gordon on The Emma Gunn Show. My guest on this episode of the podcast is Emma Story Gordon. She is an online coach and educator whose health and fitness content on Instagram is genuinely some of the best I've seen. It's evidence-based, well-researched, and presented in a way that makes sometimes complex data incredibly accessible. But I think the thing I appreciate most about Emma's content is that she presents it with such compassion and freely admits that the most complex thing in health, and specifically diet and fitness, is that in principle, weight loss, for example, is simple, but it's not easy. Not easy at all. And with every post, she hopes to make it a little easier. And don't we all know it? I know it. And if you've ever been on a diet or thrown yourself into a fitness regime to reach a goal, only to find yourself back where you started not too long after reaching it, then you will be acutely aware of how frustrating that vicious cycle is. And what Emma does is acknowledge all the things that might work against us and work around them, through them, sometimes under them, to get you where you want to be. Obviously, this episode discusses weight loss as a goal, and I know that that can be triggering for some people, but I also know this is the kind of conversation that can be helpful for a lot of people. Most of my DMs are about motivation, weight loss, and relationships with food and exercise, so I feel it's appropriate for me to create these kinds of episodes, and I also will only bring them to you if I think that the person I'm bringing to you is safe, sensible, and will add value. And that's what I really, really believe with Emma. I also believe that Emma, and you'll hear this from listening to her yourself in the episode, she's so measured, sensible, and factual in what she presents that for anyone who, like me, enjoys clear information, she really is one of the best resources I could share with you. And you know how I feel about you. You're my most excellent listeners. I wouldn't ever do you wrong. I honestly think she's fantastic. So during our conversation, we discuss a lot, everything from tapping into motivation, the many myths out there about health and weight loss and fitness, because there are many and they are all incredibly unhelpful, the huge middle ground between diet culture and anti-diet culture, why changing your mindset is always a better goal than a weight or a cloth size, the benefits of delayed gratification, that is very interesting and is definitely one that has stayed with me, why it's a myth that watching what you eat and going to the gym is joyless, why consistency is the most vital component to achieving your goals, whether it's to do with health or fitness or not, to be honest, and so, so much more. As someone who spent nearly 30 years yo-yo dieting and trying one weight loss fad after another, the biggest shift for me was realizing that how I lived when I wasn't on a diet and when I wasn't on some big fitness kick was what needed to be addressed, the time when I wasn't trying to do something. And Emma puts this perfectly in the episode when she says, "The process is your life." I love that. I might even get it put on a t-shirt. I was so pleased to chat to Emma, and I'm so delighted to bring her to the Emma Gunn Show, and I hope you get as much out of this conversation as I did. And of course, the links to where you can find her will be in the show notes. But for now, please join me in welcoming Emma Story Gordon onto the Emma Gunn Show. Welcome to the podcast, Emma Story Gordon. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted to have you on the show because you are an online coach and educator. And I started following you on Instagram not too long ago. And I genuinely think that of all of the accounts that I follow that covers fitness and nutrition, yours is the one that I appreciate the most.
Wow, that's a huge compliment. Thank you very much.
Because I feel as though you present facts with compassion.
Okay, well, I'm glad because that is the... Sorry if I seem slightly distracted. I'm just making sure I'm recording my audio, which I am.
Okay, continue.
Yeah, I think that's the approach I want to take. Like, it's scientific facts, but It's so much of coaching and helping people make changes is understanding that more about human behavior and our own biases and our own thought processes than necessarily these are the facts, go and do them. Like, That's like the baseline level, but it's then how do you get people to actually stick to those things? Because realistically, most people kind of know what to do. Most people have probably accepted after an initial period of time, maybe figuring out nutrition, that, yeah, if I want to lose body fat, I need to move more and eat less. Mm. But it's simple, but it's not easy. Like, the principle is simple, but especially in our environment, like, that's not always an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I talked to my friend Terry about this the whole time, and we both the principle is easy, the science is easy, just eat less, do some exercise. But actually, if you say that, but it's implementing, it's actually living that's the tough thing. And actually, I'm sure you've had this, even if you say,
move more, eat less, that can generate quite a reaction. And I know I've spoken online before and people have said, thank you for talking about, for example, in my case, talking about emotional eating. And they've said, thank you for talking about that. It's not just as simple as move more, eat less. And my response is always, the frustrating thing about move more, eat less is that once you get over your emotional issue, that does work.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Like, I think you're completely right. Like, when someone's like, it's not that easy. I'm like, yeah, it's not that easy, but it is that simple. Mm-hmm. And that kind of takes the barrier away for people. So yeah, there are loads of reasons that we eat that have nothing to do with the fuel that our body needs. And so dealing with them can be really, really tough. But the same principle is true. Like, energy balance still holds true.
Mm.
It's just, yeah, putting that into practice can be pretty hard to do.
It's so tough. And I think another thing is that there's just so much noise. And again, this is another reason why I really appreciate your content, because, and I think you might have said this on DM, there's a massive middle ground between diet culture and anti-diet. And I really wanted to unpick what you meant by that, actually, because that for me is where it gets so, so muddy. And I really struggle to see the wood from the trees.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, there's a huge push for anti-diet in some areas of, I guess, like, kind of outside of fitness. And that's the notion that, you know, dieting will cause eating disorders or a poor mental health state. And approached from the wrong angles, it can do. And it can be a very negative thing. But, and I would agree with the anti-diet message around your typical diet culture diets, like stick to 600 calories a day, never eat carbs, like don't eat at certain times, like give yourself huge amounts of restriction. That's unhealthy. Mm. And if you're doing it from a place of like hating your body as well and trying to hate yourself into change, that is a really negative place to be. But what I think, and this is what I mean about the huge middle ground, is that some people do this because they love doing it. And actually not storing too much body fat and not having metabolic complications of that and prioritizing your health is a form of like self-love, self-respect, like actually you're caring for your body. And if you think about it in terms of how you would nurture a child, like you wouldn't let your kid just sit in all day watching TV and eating crisps on the couch. No. So like one sort of cue that I sometimes give is like, no one's coming to do it for you. You need to parent yourself as if you were someone that you love. And I think so many of us are really quite horrible to ourselves, and that our own self-talk is so negative that we are trying to hate ourselves into change. And as soon as you flip that round and you're like, no, I'm doing this, like I'm eating well because I love myself and I love my body and I deserve to feel my best, that changes everything, even the language that you use for yourself. So instead of being on a diet and telling yourself that you need to stick to this certain diet, or you need to go to the gym, or you can't have that because you're on a diet, that's only ever going to be short term, because as soon as you tell yourself you can't have something, all you can think about is, I really want to have that. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of working against yourself. Whereas just this simple flip of, I get to go for a walk today, or I get to go to the gym, or I'm doing this because I know it will make me feel better, or I'm choosing not to have that extra piece of cake now, and it's my choice because I've got a goal at the moment and my goal is to lose some body fat. And just trying to take away the emotion from that, like the way that I talk about body fat in coaching as well, is more, you have some excess energy. Like, that's all it is. There's some excess energy there. And there's so much emotion involved in the word fat, or being fat, or calling yourself fat, or calling someone else fat. And actually, you know, it's just some extra energy. You've eaten a bit more energy than what you needed. Mm-hmm. There's no shame in that. There's no guilt in that. You don't need to make a big deal out of it. And now we're going to expend some of that extra energy if you want to lose body fat. Like, it can be as simple as that. And that kind of takes away all of the stigma around it. And I know it's not quite that simple to take away all weight stigma, but it makes it, like, yeah, it's a step in the right direction, right? And really, like, I'm not a huge campaigner. I know that I'm not going to change weight stigma for everyone. That's not my place in what I do. But if I can change the way people view themselves, my clients view themselves, and the language they use about themselves, like, that's my goal, really.
It's so interesting. You said just a minute ago about don't hate yourself into change. And it's almost, as you say, flip the vocabulary to love yourself into change. But it's funny, isn't it? There's almost sort of an honor in that. I mean, I really like Jillian Michaels, but she definitely is like a bit of a drill sergeant. Like, she will come over. I'm doing one of her DVDs at the moment. And she really hazes some of these people, but I quite enjoy that. But it's taking that kind of caricature way of being a sergeant major, and actually without it becoming beating yourself up, is what I mean. Like, there used to be a big thing in the 80s, I think, and early 90s, about training under that kind of, the harder you work, the more it hurts.
Yeah. And all this kind of stuff, which I think actually for some people can be quite motivating. But it's really like deep down, like, why are you doing these things? And I think sometimes, like in an exercise session, it is quite motivating to have someone shout at you a little bit. But you still, it shouldn't be from, I guess, the crux of it. Like, I'm exercising because I hate my body and the way it looks, and more, I'm exercising because I want to see the amazing things my body can do. Like, that's exciting. And I really try and move clients away as well from thinking of exercise as a way to lose weight or to burn calories, and more of like a celebration of what you can do, building some muscle, like, I don't know, setting yourself goals, setting PBs, achieving things that you didn't think were possible. And the amount of confidence that you will get from doing that, that translates to all areas of your life, is incredible. Like, it seems silly, but if you're going from, oh, I started a program and I couldn't even do one push-up, and by the end I could do 10, and I've never been able to do anything like that with my body before, like, it's incredible. The confidence that like translates into the rest of your life from doing something hard is amazing. And this is actually what I was going to ask you, because before we came on, you were talking about how your weight's fluctuated throughout your life. This is slightly different, but did you, and you said how you could almost tell where you were emotionally at different stages of your life. Were you heavier or lighter when you were feeling like at your worst, or like when your emotions were higher?
Heavier when things weren't necessarily going as well. Although there was one particular period where it was flipped. So, because I was just desperately unhappy, I did really restrict myself. But that was only one particular instance. But yeah, it was a reflection of, it was eating feelings. It was... Yeah. I can't cope with the world, so I will comfort myself with this bakery good.
Yeah. And I think that's so common. And this is why I wanted to bring it up. And then people relate being lighter, or you might have a certain weight where you're like, oh, that's my, like some people call this their happy weight. Like that's where I'm happiest. And actually it has nothing to do with your weight. Obviously it's kind of everything else that's going on. So it's like this reverse correlation that people get wrong. They're like, right, if I don't feel great, I'm just going to diet because I know that when I weigh 65 kilograms, I feel really good. When actually it's almost the opposite of what's happening. So what's really happening is, because you feel good, you're looking after yourself. It's so much easier to eat well, to exercise, to go out for walks, to just generally take care of yourself when you feel good. So it's probably because you're feeling good that you're taking care of yourself that you weigh less, rather than how most people attribute it, which is, you know, when I weighed this weight, I was happy. And I think the problem with that is dieting is often used as a scapegoat for other things that are going on. So you're like, I'm really unhappy because X, Y, and Z, and I have loads of stresses in my life. Do you know what's easier than dealing with all of that, dealing with all my emotions? It's just a diet. Because actually reaching 65 kilograms is easier than dealing with an unhappy relationship or unhappy workplace or whatever other stresses you have in your life. So I think the reason why you're dieting is quite important in terms of dieting in a healthy way, and kind of coming back to that anti-diet message and the notion that like all diets are bad. A lot of it depends on why you're actually dieting.
It's a really good point, actually. And when I think about it, you just saying that, it makes me think that previously when I had dieted, it was because I don't want to be bad anymore, because I don't want to get bullied anymore. And then it would be because if I'm thin, life will be better, like all of those sort of ridiculous things. And when I actually got my head together is when I just basically like stood in the bathroom in front of the mirror and just went, you are not going to do this when you're 50. Sort yourself out. And it was for the first time, I guess what I'm trying to say by that, it was the long game. It was thinking about, this isn't just about now, this isn't about looking good in an outfit, this is about not wanting to have complications, or not wanting, basically wanting to do the best for myself, to future proof myself as best I can. And I knew that shifting some weight would help that.
Yeah. And I think like that's incredible. And I think everyone deep down knows that, but it's so hard to do something for your future self, right? Because realistically, everyone probably does things now that they know that they'll regret when they're older, like habits, like whether that's smoking, drinking a little bit too much, being a little bit overweight, not exercising as much as they should, all these things. And it's one of the reasons it's so hard is that psychologists have shown that you see your future self as a stranger. So again, like if you take it out of that context and you think about how much people don't really like investing in their pensions and things like that, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, well, you know, it's very hard to actually, if you try and envision yourself retiring, I'm like, well, I don't know that person. Like they'll deal with the fact that I never paid into my pension. And it's kind of the same with your health. It's like, oh, well, I can't really even imagine being old. And you're like, well, yeah, it's a hard mindset to get into. Like, will I regret this when I'm older? But one of the best ways to make decisions is that kind of formula, like regret minimization. You've probably spoken about this before, like Jeff Bezos, didn't he sort of make that famous?
I don't actually, I've just finished, as soon as you say Jeff Bezos, I just think about that maniacal laugh as he's outside his space shuttle. I hadn't heard about that, but that regret minimization is a great way of thinking about things. Just do I want to regret this in the future?
That was, I think, I mean, that's maybe where I just first read it, but his whole thing, wait, was it Jeff Bezos? Yeah. I think his whole thing about when he started Amazon, am I talking about the right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So his whole thing was he was about to get, I think he had some high paying job in New York and he was about to get his like yearly bonus, but instead of staying on for that short-term goal, like that short-term temptation of most people would be like, well, I'll just wait a couple of months and then I'll leave after my bonus. But realistically, there'll always be something. This is the same sort of thing as why people don't start fat loss goals or like start a new lifestyle or a diet plan or something, or really anything. They're like, well, you know, actually I've got a couple of birthdays coming up in the next couple of weeks, so I'll start after that. And then at that point, you know, oh, well, actually my kids are off school now, so I'll start when they get back to school. There's always a reason not to do something. And I think that, so the way he looks at it is, okay, when I'm 60, when it doesn't really matter what age, but 70, when I look back, will I regret not trying? Will I regret not doing this? And I guess depending on the decision, like obviously his was starting a company, and because that's such a big risk, like you have to consider if this works or not, would I regret not trying? That's kind of what you're asking yourself. And I guess the same is true for starting like anything new. You're trying to, because we normally look for like the immediate reward, i.e. the bonus that's coming up, or the fact that, I don't know, we're going on holiday and maybe now it's not the exact right time to start, but realizing that there'll never be a right time to start and you'll probably always wish that you'd started earlier. I think that's a big difference. And the whole way that I coach as well is trying to get people to realize that it's not about putting your life on hold. And I guess that's kind of sounds like what it was for you that clicked. Instead of like kind of yo-yo dieting and your weight fluctuating because you were really rigid for a period of time and then went back to the normal way of eating and then really rigid, which is what most people do throughout their whole life, like fully accepting that this is a lifelong thing. I'm not putting my life on hold. I'm living my life as best it can be, but I'm making some adaptations, like some changes so that I lose body fat or so that I'm becoming more healthy or so that I'm incorporating exercise into my life. And that switch in mindset is how you get long-term results. Not seeing it as this is a 6-week diet, this is an 8-week diet.
Exactly. And I did, I guess I was kind of foolish because I thought, and I would train so hard. And I remember when I first started one of my first magazine jobs, I was offered a personal training session with like one of the big London personal trainers, gym in Berkeley Square, was given a program and went to the gym every single day for 18 months, doing the same workout, which I know is going to make your teeth itch, doing exactly the same, no, not really progressing at all, anything. But my... not increasing weights, nothing, but my body completely changed. And I did get to the point where I got so tired that I just thought, I'll relax for a bit and I'll stand. I can't believe I'm going to say this because it just makes no sense and I like science. I just thought, oh, it'll be fine. This is how I am now. This is just once you're thin, you're thin. And it's just obviously that's not the case. It is.
Yeah. And I think
work.
When you look at people who you think are quote unquote naturally thin, or just anyone who you see who's in shape, and you really look at their behaviors, you see that their behaviors are in line with the way that they look. Like, whether that be, you know, you'll see people that are thin but don't seem to exercise much, don't seem to watch their diet much, but they probably move quite a lot during the day. They're probably the kind of person that doesn't sit down. And as much as it looks like they don't eat a lot, you probably notice that they're not that interested in food. Maybe their hunger levels aren't as high. Maybe they do have a pizza every Friday night, but they're not eating a full pizza every Friday night. You know, like, there isn't any secrets here. I know that most people think, oh, you know, I'm the always one watching my weight and I'm still overweight, and this person never watches their weight and they're lean. It's probably because they're moving more. Like, that's a huge aspect, just throughout the day, like moving a little bit more and generally eating a little bit less, even if it's not like the quote unquote best diet, it still comes back to energy balance. So I think that's often something to remember. Like, I have had discussions like this, and normally I just let it like slide, but I met someone in the gym at like 6 in the morning. I used to always go to the gym at 6, and they were like, oh, you're so lucky that you always just stay in shape. And I was thinking, where do you see me every morning at 6? Like, in the gym. Like, it's not luck. Look at the behaviors of people, what people are doing. That's what's getting them results. So it might seem like easy to them because it's become just part of what they do, part of their day, part of their life, but it's still the behaviors that are creating the results.
And I think also sticking to any kind of goal, you kind of touched on it a minute ago, whether it's eating a certain way or working out to a certain program, is it kind of gets a bad rap for being joyless. But I don't necessarily think that's true.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think one of the biggest like myths or things that people think that they need is motivation. That's always the question. Like, can you give me motivation? How do I get motivation? And there's two things here. Like, most people don't have motivation when they start. It's about starting. Like, actually what gives you motivation is starting to see results, starting to feel better, starting to actually reap the benefits of what you're doing. That's the most motivating thing. But realistically, no one's motivated all the time. So it's just about it being a consistent routine, and exactly what you touched on. If it is joyless, if it was a horrible thing to do, if you're doing something that you really don't enjoy, and like I touched on before, like if you're hating yourself into change, you won't keep doing it. So you have to enjoy the process, because essentially, this is cheesy, but the process is your life. You need to incorporate this into your life.
That's a t-shirt, Emma. That is a t-shirt.
And sometimes, like, this is really cheesy as well, but like a good analogy for that is if your journey, if you will, is a road trip and you're always waiting to get to that destination, or what you were talking about, like having a happy weight or not feeling happy until you get to that weight, and you're almost like delaying your own happiness and pausing your own life until you think that you've got to this end goal, you've wasted the road trip, because the road trip was the journey, right? The whole point in a road trip is you enjoy the journey. When you get to the destination, that's actually the end. So you have to start like enjoying the process. And diet and exercise doesn't have to be horrible. You can find exercise that you enjoy. There isn't really a secret formula for the quote unquote best exercise. If you don't like HIIT training, don't do HIIT training. If you hate running, don't run. Find something that you do enjoy and start doing that. And then it just becomes a much easier process and you don't resent going to do these things.
I feel like the majority of my questions are just your Instagram post that I've written down onto the pad in front of me. But one of the things that you said, which you touched on just a minute ago online, is about mastering delayed gratification. And that for me is another one that makes me just want to punch the air, because it's so true. It's almost, and it's an adjunct, but people who listen to this podcast or who follow me on Instagram will know that I struggle with it, or was struggling with hair loss issues. And when I started the protocol, pretty much I was told, please don't look for any results for 3 months. Please don't look for any regrowth really for 3 months. And then let's look at it. And I feel it's the same with any kind of health shift as well. If you are making some sort of diet change, and I've signed up for all of those classes and I've been to them before, where your first week you get quite a good weight loss, you drop a, you know, 4 or 5 pounds in that first week when you sign up to something like, I won't say the brand name, but I'm sure people can guess. And that's what really excites you. But actually, it's about that downward trend, and actually just keeping your eye on that rather than about those sort of very short-termist sort of losses in the first instance or in the first blush of it.
Yeah, I think I genuinely think in everything in life, if you can delay, if you can get on board with kind of mastering delayed gratification, you'll be successful, like in like almost any area. The same is true with things like, I mean, like growing a podcast. You're not going to like, it's very unlikely your first podcast is going to just blow up. Like, it's about consistently doing it and doing it even when it seems like it doesn't isn't really going in the right direction, because you know that actually doing more of them is going to eventually mean that your listenership grows, but you might not see the initial results from the effort that you're putting in. And the exact same is true with fat loss. And I think the only way that I've managed to get my head around it a little bit is kind of to lean into that. Same with hard things, because most hard things have a bigger reward. Most things that are hard and require delayed gratification are things that I actually want to achieve, that I actually care about. So that could be like studying at university and getting a degree. That could be losing weight. That could be getting in shape. I mean, building muscle is one of the biggest ones, because it's really hard to see results, and you're not going to increase your strength every single week. And you're probably, you know, after a pretty finite period of time, if you've been consistently resistance training for say a year, you probably can't see results month on month, let alone week on week, which is what most people want. So you really have to just, in a sense, trust the process. Okay, I know I'm doing all the right things. I know I'm sleeping enough. I know I'm getting in my resistance training. I know that I'm fueling my body properly. And I know that I will be building muscle, but I can't see it. And that's the key.
Do you know what? I'm so glad you said that, because when I've talked about this, when I've addressed this on the podcast before, I used to think if I can work out every day, then it's literally like before and after. So before, I'd think if I can work out every day, and that used to be running for me. So it'd be like, and I'd have to get up early, because even though I know scientifically you don't burn more calories, depending on the time of day that you work out, there was something a little bit more holier than thou about working out first thing that made me feel it was more efficient. And then when I kind of addressed the bigger issues and decided to move forward, I did the bro structure of, I'm going to do legs on a Monday, I'm going to do upper body on a Wednesday, and I'm going to do my core and back on a Friday. And I will trust that because I'm doing those things, I'm lifting weights, I know I'm working those muscles, I will trust that that is enough. And the old me would have gone, but that's less than half the week. Yeah. I just, again, as you said, I just trusted the process and thought, I'm going to try and take my neuroses out of this and just trust the science of it.
Yeah. I think that that is something that a lot of people fall into, in that more is better in many facets of life, but like, especially with exercise, they're like, oh, right. If one workout is good, then working out every day is better. Or what if I do two a day? Because I could just about fit that in. You're like, no. If you think about exercise as a stimulus, and then your body has to adapt to that stimulus, it needs time, it needs energy, it needs protein, it needs like rest and recovery so that you can train again. And really, that's what fitness is. That's what building muscle is. You're creating some kind of stress on the body and then allowing it to adapt so that the next time the body is under that stress, it's better able to deal with it. That's the whole emphasis of exercise. So if you're stressing the body to an extent that it can't actually recover from that stress, then you're going to be going backwards, or you're just sort of wasting your time. And I've definitely done this, and it's one thing saying it, and it's a different thing actually like living it, if that makes sense. Because even though logically I know that, and I know that the science supports that, and anecdote would support that, but when you're training 6 days a week and you're like, I need to cut this down to three or four. And actually, I think I was training about 10 times a week. This was when I worked as a personal trainer face-to-face. So I could get sessions in all the time. And I was like, more is always better. And I cut it right back to 5 sessions. And I noticed absolutely no difference in my physique. And I had so much more energy. And it took a little bit of time for that energy to increase. And I didn't realize that I didn't have much energy, because I was like, well, my training seems fine. Like, I don't feel that tired. But it's funny, because when you've always lived being a little bit, or for a long time, being a little bit tired, that's your norm. So if you, I think a lot of people are like, they're training a lot and they kind of think, oh no, I've got good energy levels. But it's only good in comparison to what you deem your norm. And if that's just become your norm, then, you know, like you have this like lower barrier. So that was quite interesting. But yeah, I would definitely recommend if you are doing that amount of exercise, not to do it, unless maybe you are, like, if you're an elite level athlete, fine. But I think what people miss, and sometimes I'll have this discussion with clients, is they're like, well, CrossFitters train 10 times a week, so surely I can. I'm like, right, but what do they do outside of that? Because you have a job, two kids, and, you know, loads of other things going on. They literally live and breathe CrossFit. So when they're not training, they're recovering. Mm-hmm. They go to bed at 9 o'clock every night. They don't have kids waking them up all night. Like, it's such a different lifestyle. And if you want to train that much and adapt to it and recover from it and get results, you also need to really be prioritizing what you're doing outside of those workouts as well. Like, they don't drink alcohol. They're always in bed by nine. Like, they're going and getting massages. They're doing active recovery. Like, all of these things are ticking all the boxes because they're essentially elite athletes. You're not doing that because you just want to lose some body fat and feel your best. You don't need to go to that extreme. Mm. And I guess that's another thing where people fall, like, go off track a little bit and can only stick to things for a short period of time. Because as you said, like, I tried to exercise every single day and it wasn't sustainable.
Mm. It just isn't. And even if it was a work commitment, I remember vividly my editor coming up to me at my desk years and years and years ago saying, oh, could you interview so-and-so from The Bill, but it needs to be at Television Center tomorrow at 9 a.m. And I just went, I'll be at the gym. How rude of me. But I just thought, well, I can't make that work because I can't get my workout in first. The gym opens at 6:30. There's no way I'm going to be able to get there in time. But that's how much I had prioritized it, because I had thought if I don't do it, even missing one day was me then almost deeming it a failure. And I guess actually that's an interesting thing to talk to you about, is like the failure mindset. Because I know you talk about the mindset a lot in your coaching. And I know that you said that with the coaching that you do, yes, weight loss might be, or fat loss might be a part of it, but actually the bigger wins for you as a coach is when you see someone's mindset change, or when they say to you that their relationship with food has changed for the better. And I saw a lovely testimonial actually the other day that really made me smile, where I think it was a lady said, it's not about the pictures. It's not about what you can see. It's about what you can't see that's really changed.
Yeah. And I think what was incredible about that is she had had pretty incredible weight loss. And this is the thing that people maybe don't understand. When we talk so much about mindset change, that's usually what's caused the weight loss. And it's usually because almost exactly what you've just said. And instead of thinking, I've missed one workout, what's the point in doing anything? Or I went over my calories one day, or I ate something that, you know, I hadn't planned to eat. There's no point in even continuing. I'll just, like, you know, we call it like falling off plan or something, but even that I'm trying to get away from. Yeah. Because I'm like, there isn't a plan to fall off. This is the whole point. But it's the notion, like, I guess that's the problem, right? You feel like you've fallen off plan. Mm-hmm. And then you think, well, there's no point anymore. And this is why I try and instill like this imperfect action. Like, actually, it's never like the barbecue where you overate, or the night out that you went on, or even the holiday where you overate for a week. It's never that's impacted your long-term fat loss. It's your response to that. It's coming home and then thinking, oh, I've put on 5 pounds, that, you know what, I can't even be bothered with this anymore. I'm just going to continue the way I am. And then a couple of months later, you realize you're unhappy and you start again. Instead of just being like, right, I had a good holiday, I ate too much, I'm moving on. Or if you do overeat and you didn't mean to, reflecting on it, being like, okay, why did I overeat? Was I tired? Was I hungry? Was I emotional? Did I leave it too long between lunch and dinner? How can I improve on that the next time I'm in that situation so it doesn't happen again? Then you draw a line under it and you move on and you get back to it. And I think that really the key is that response to going off track, because everyone will go off track from time to time. And it like, I don't even like using the word off track, but do you know what I mean? Like, they will eat a bit more than you'd plan to. That's completely fine. It's a normal part of life. But the people that get results, and that mindset shift that's so important, is just, oh, that happened. Okay. It doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't mean I failed on my diet. It doesn't mean I have to start again. It doesn't mean there's no point eating well for the rest of the day. It just means I did something that I potentially hadn't planned to do. Going to learn from it, going to move on. And that's actually, that mindset change is what results in weight loss.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned there about putting on weight, getting on the scales after holiday. And it actually made me think about one of your other posts where it's scales and it says irrelevant. And I wanted to ask you actually, because I dabbled for a little while in some of the, and it was never going to suit me, but I dabbled for a bit in some of the premises of maybe the more body acceptance side of things, which was, I remember a friend saying to me, don't weigh yourself, just measure yourself or judge it by your clothes. And actually, the day that I decided I wanted to, you know, don't want to be doing this when I'm 50, was the day I got on the scale for the first time in a couple of years. And yes, it was really quite upsetting. I was shocked, but it told me where I was and it told me how far away I was from where I wanted to be. And I found that to be quite useful. I know that weighing oneself, if somebody is prone to, obviously there are people who have experienced eating disorders or who maybe get obsessive about it. So I don't want to encourage it, but I also don't want to say that it doesn't have its uses.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's such a good point as well, because there is no black and white and it depends on the individual and how they think about things. And I think as a coach as well, it's really important not to, what's the right word, like project like either your own experience or your previous clients' experiences on other people. Like you might just see the scales as some data and it's useful data, and you're completely aware that they fluctuate around your menstrual cycle or dependent on your food volume. But yeah, you're happy to look at trends over time and that works really well for you. Someone else might let it ruin their whole day and it's not appropriate for them to weigh themselves. It completely depends on the person. And I think in any case, having numerous measures is quite useful. So yeah, still take measurements, especially like waist circumference, really important for health. So that's a good one to take. Take progress photos, see what you're doing in the gym. Like I don't weigh myself anymore, not because I have any attachment to the scales, but I don't have a weight loss goal. I don't really have any need to know exactly what I weigh every day or every week. It doesn't make any difference to me. But a marker that I like at the moment is how many pull-ups I can do. And I think that that's quite useful because it's a body weight exercise, and it could be how many push-ups you can do. It could be what's your squat in comparison to your body weight, which is quite a nice marker as well. But anyway, like having performance goals, which are in some way related to how heavy you are, because there's no way, like in my head, I'm just like, well, if I can do, you know, as many pull-ups as I can, there's no way I can be overweight. Like it's impossible. In fact, it would be very impressive if I was even heavier and able to do the same amount of pull-ups. So either way, I've either got really strong or I'm still fairly lean. So it just doesn't matter to me what the scales say. And I just think that usually they are a good tool. And the reason that we still get people to use them as coaches, as good coaches, is that it allows us to see what energy balance is doing over time. So realistically, if you're losing a decent amount of fat, the scales will go down. They will trend down over time. And there are certain things that can mask fat loss a little bit on the scales. And I think some people are like, oh, but I'm building muscle. And unfortunately, if you've got a lot of body fat to lose, there's not a chance that you're building muscle at the same rate of which you're losing body fat. It's just a very, very slow process. So although maybe you lost 10 pounds of fat, but it only says on the scales you've lost 8 pounds, maybe you built 2 pounds of muscle. Great. Mm-hmm. So it's masking some. And that's fantastic. Like if you can build muscle while you're losing fat, but it's not going to mask all of your fat loss if you have a significant amount of fat to lose. So we like to use it just to see, you know, if you've been sticking to say 1800 calories for a month and the scales haven't moved down at all, maybe if fat loss is your goal, we do need to either make sure that you're moving more or eating less or drop your calories a little bit. So it allows us some data. It's not perfect. Nothing is, but it's one of like many tools that we'd use. But now and again, you do find kind of outliers where it's like the scales haven't changed at all. And I'm like, okay, well, show me your progress photos. And I'm like, okay, there's a huge change here. Like you've definitely lost body fat. And usually what happens there is it's just not shown on the scales yet. Like it will eventually show on the scales, but maybe you're retaining a bit of water. Maybe there's some food volume there. You know, it could literally be anything. And I guess one of the other points is just not to overthink it. If you're ticking all the boxes and you know you're doing all the right things, don't worry too much about the scales. But I agree with you. Like, I think just outright blanket saying to everyone, throw away the scales, is pretty unhelpful.
Well, the thing I think it allowed me to do, and I was already well down this path with it, I was already quite disconnected from my body because of all of the ups and downs and the yo-yos that I've been doing over the years. And so that kind of gave me license, I guess, to disconnect even further. So although it was shocking to then get back on the scales, as I said, for me, I found it to be really helpful. But in your coaching, do you find that actually that disconnection between what people, well, the emotional connection with their bodies is somewhat frayed?
In what way do you mean? Because in some ways, when you're saying that, I'm like, oh, that's quite a good thing. Like, if you're like, if by disconnection you mean I am me and I do all these things and I have my identity and I'm an awesome person and I'm kind and I'm intelligent and, you know, I've got all these attributes and I also have a body, I kind of think that disconnect is quite good. Like, who you are and how much body fat you have, they're irrelevant. Mm. Or what your body looks like, it's not the most important thing about you. It's way down there. So that disconnects, but I don't think that's what you were meaning.
No, I guess what I meant was the disconnect for me was I had in the back of my mind, or maybe even in the front of my mind, because I'm sure a lot of people can relate to the fact that I was definitely somebody who thought about my weight, what my body looked like, what I was eating, food, etc., a lot. Like, it took up a lot of my mental capacity. My actions didn't support any of those wants or desires. And I guess I was kidding myself because the disconnect was my behaviors weren't matching my intentions. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that happens a lot just generally as well. Like, even just people saying this is my value. And then actually it's like, what do you do every day? Do your actions actually align with getting you closer to that? Or are they even aligned with your values or your goals at the time? So I think that is really common. And I don't know what it was for you, whether it was like weighing yourself or a certain time of life or what that clicking point was. And it seems to be different for everyone, but if you could like encapsulate that and give it to someone. And sometimes it's just like the right message was there all along or is there, but you're not ready to hear it. And I think I had, so this year or last year now, I guess, like I went to therapy for the first time and I think I probably would have benefited or probably more from going like years ago, but equally part of me was like, oh, I kind of wish I'd done this sooner. And I get a lot of clients that are like that, wish I'd found you sooner. And I'm like, I don't actually know if it would have benefited you. Like, maybe, but sometimes you have to be in the right place to hear the right message with an open mind. Mm. And like what you were saying before about almost being shut off to the fact that it is as simple as energy balance, it's not that easy, and give yourself some compassion because it is a freaking hard thing to do, but it is that simple. And once you kind of like break down your own barriers and kind of accept that, that is what you need to do. But sometimes you're not ready to hear that. And it's like getting in the headspace to be ready to hear that.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And actually, I wanted to ask you a little bit about one of the things that I keep seeing time and time again is people saying 95% of diets fail, 95% of diets fail. And there's so much information out there that can be used or twisted, dare I say, to essentially like make you think, why bother even starting? But
I can't understand what the benefit of giving out this message is to anyone. Like, it's almost just like, well, why even try?
Mm.
And how is that helpful? And how is that empowering? And actually, this is quite interesting because I'm going to murder this because I haven't actually gone and looked at the study myself. But this morning I was talking to one of my business partners, Amelia, and she was talking about this. Like, so that stat comes from one study.
Mm-hmm.
And the study was done, I think, on people who had gone to hospital for another reason, but anyway, were obese. And the way that they measured, so all they were given was one diet plan, little plan. So no like follow through, no working with a coach, no like ongoing support, just one plan. They follow up in 2 years. And to have a successful diet, you had to have lost 40 pounds. So part of this is like, how are you defining successful diet?
Mm.
And I do agree that a lot of diets fail. And I think we've touched on this, but a lot of diets fail because of the short-term mindset of it, because they think this is a 6-week program. This is an 8-week diet. This is I'm on a diet. And often when you're like, if you're with your mates, you're like, I'm on a diet. They're like, oh, when does that finish? And it's like, well, the whole point is like, everyone has these connotations when you hear the word diet. It's like, how long? Well, the whole point is that if you want to maintain the results, you need to keep doing the behaviors. And sure, like, you don't need to be in a deficit forever. If you were, then you would waste away. But so the calories will increase, but all the behaviors stay the same. Mm. All the real difference between going from a calorie deficit to maintenance isn't as much as what you think. It's like maybe two pieces of toast or something. Like, it's not a huge, huge difference. And actually those messages, like we spoke about this a little bit on Instagram, but a similar message that people are given is that when you diet, you'll just start burning less calories. So there's no point dieting. And this whole like metabolic damage notion. And I think that's really problematic as well, because, you know, if someone's ready to change and they're like, yeah, I really want to do this. And then like read the paper and it's like 95% of diets fail. And actually when you cut your calories, you'll just end up moving less. So there's no point doing that either. And then you're like, well, how do I lose weight then? Am I just stuck where I am? And that is just hugely discouraging, especially when it's written by sometimes like science, that there is science behind it, but it's just misplaced science. So what does happen when you reduce your calorie intake is often you respond by reducing your calorie expenditure. So this is why it's called energy balance, because you change one side of that equation, it can impact the other side. And what is useful nowadays is that most people track their steps or have access to being able to track their steps, which is quite a crude measure of your energy expenditure side of the equation, but really quite useful, because most of the research on this topic, and some of it's pretty incredible, like it shows that some people, and this tends to be people who are maybe slightly genetically predisposed to weighing more, they completely negate their calorie deficit by moving less. So they might be dieting, but then they habitually move less. And if you don't track your steps and you don't notice this, it can be completely subconscious. You might just end up, you know, moving slightly less. And that's been shown to completely negate a whole 500 calorie deficit, which is mad. And you see this in like rodent models as well. So if you put all mice on the same calorie deficit, some of them will lose more weight, some of them will lose less weight, and it's directly correlated to how much they move. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be the defining thing. Now, even when you account for that, and this is where the myth of metabolic damage comes from, there is an element of what's known as adaptive thermogenesis. And this is essentially just you becoming slightly more efficient as you lose weight. So the headline of you will burn less calories when you drop your calories is true, but it's for sort of three reasons. One, people tend to move less. Two, you're a smaller person. So a huge element, like the biggest part of your total daily energy expenditure for the day is what's known as your basal metabolic rate. And that's directly related to how much mass you have to maintain. So how many calories are just expended, just you being you, not moving, lying in bed all day. Now, the smaller person you are, the less calories you need to maintain your mass. That kind of makes sense. So if you used to weigh 100 kilograms and now you weigh 70, your basal metabolic rate will have reduced. That's not metabolic damage. That's an inevitable part of life. It also kind of goes against disproves the myth of people who are overweight having a slower metabolism. Actually, normally they have a higher metabolism because there is more of them to maintain. So that happens. And then there is this slight adaptive thermogenesis. And when I say slight, the numbers are something between 70 and 130 calories a day. So it's not the reason that you can't lose weight on 1200 calories. If you're in a huge deficit, you'll still lose weight. It might be the reason that you need to drop your calories slightly more than someone else. Mm-hmm. And I think that the magnitude of effect is so important to consider. So that probably, you know, it's what, an apple. It's not a huge deal. It's not the reason that you can't lose weight. But I think sometimes that's misunderstood within the fitness industry, and people kind of get a bit, I think mostly it comes from these low calorie diets, and people think that the low calorie diet will impact their metabolism, and it won't. The reason that you're not losing weight on a low calorie diet is it's so hard to stick to that you're probably overeating at other occasions. The when you do get adaptive thermogenesis, so this small reduction in calorie need, despite the fact that your basal metabolic rate, I'm going to go back on this. So there's a good example of this is if we both weighed 60 kilograms, say, but you'd previously weighed 100 kilograms, your basal metabolic rate is just slightly lower than mine. So that's the sort of 70 to 130 calories, because I've always been 60 kilograms. So you've become slightly more efficient due to the weight loss.
Right.
It's not due to the low calories. It's due to the weight loss. So if you're on low calories and you think that you're damaging your metabolism, you're not. But if you've lost a significant amount of weight, you may be slightly more efficient. And that's sort of the difference there. So it's the total weight loss, not the amount of calories that you're eating, that would impact your metabolism a small amount.
Because I've read recently people saying that they have stopped dieting. And one of the reasons is because they wrecked their metabolism and now they don't burn calories. Or their basal metabolic rate is so low that it's almost impossible for them to get into a deficit. And I wanted to ask you about that because I know obviously you know your stuff inside out. Is that biologically, physiologically possible?
No, I mean, if you take this to the extreme, that would cure starvation, right? If your body adapted so much that when you dropped your calories very low, it was just able to function on 800 calories without losing weight, no one would starve. So that doesn't happen. There is a small adaptation. And I think this is why that myth won't die, is because there's usually in things that keep coming up and up, you're like, there's a tiny bit of science here. So I can't say that that's completely untrue, but it's just the magnitude of effect that's so important. Like you're looking at probably less than 100 calories, not the reason that you're not losing weight despite dropping your calories really low. And it always, always is. And I see this genuinely with thousands of women, is always setting yourself a realistic calorie target and sticking to it. And that's the difference between yo-yoing at 1200 calories and getting like substantial weight loss at 1800 calories and enjoying your life so much more. And it's hard mentally because, you know, if you come to me and you're on 1200 calories, or you kind of in a way sort of tricked yourself into believing that you're definitely sticking to that long term, and I say we need to increase your calories to 1800, and you're like, well, I understand energy balance, that's not going to work. It's hard to just trust someone that is what you need to do. And I think a good way of break it, like, and normally what I do is give people a little bit of science and a lot of reassurance, but even your basal metabolic rate at about 60 kilograms is about 1400 calories a day. So even if you do nothing, you're burning that. So there's no way that you need to be on 1200 calories. If you tell me you're also getting in 10,000 steps and you're going to the gym four times a week, like, you need to start fueling yourself. And once you start doing that, the weight loss starts to come.
So what about this thing? And I'm sure lots of people have heard this, and I've definitely heard it, of if you eat too little, you will stop losing weight.
Yeah, I guess it's that same notion, isn't it? And it's just not true.
Mm.
And another good example of this, which I am not condoning and I would not recommend, but there was a man, and there's a case study on this, who decided he needed to lose weight, was very obese, and just decided he wasn't going to eat for a whole year. So he didn't eat for a year. Yeah, I know. Would not recommend.
Was this his idea of, I'm just going to let all the energy come off my body?
Essentially,
right?
Yeah, okay. Like, and I think this might seem like a weird thing to say, but in some ways that's kind of easier. Like, I'm not going to eat full stop, because moderation is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, just and I'm sure most people who are overweight and have tried to lose weight before, like, have found that that's quite a hard thing to do. So he was like, I'm not going to eat anything. Now, he was under medical supervision, and he did get injected with certain vitamins and minerals so that he wasn't, I don't know, deficient in anything. But yeah, he lost a substantial amount of weight and was generally fine. Like, you don't adapt to, like, if you've got energy there to lose, if you've got stored energy there to lose, then that's what will happen. Like, it's still energy balance. So I guess that's just a good example of, yes, on a physiological level, you will lose weight if you're not eating very much full stop. You can't eat too little to lose weight on a physiological level. On a behavioral level, completely different story. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's the difference between like science and coaching, like actually applying that to people. Because if I put all my clients on really low calories, would they lose more weight? No, they just stop adhering to the calories. And that's how, like, that's a behavioral response. And just to take any kind of like stigma or shame around that, like if you're saying that you're sticking to 1,000 calories and you're not losing weight, and we know that you're overeating at other periods of time, there's no shame around that. Like, I would do the same. You would do the same. Mm. Like, it's just a normal human response to over-restriction is overindulgence. So when you're over-restricting, at some point you will probably overindulge. And the way to get out of that cycle, because normally it is a bit of a cycle, you're like, oh, I stick to 1,000 calories Monday to Thursday. And then for some reason I end up overeating Friday to Monday, and then I get back on it again. And usually what people do, which is the wrong approach, is I'm going to try really hard this Thursday not to overeat. I'm going to really try and avoid that overeating episode, instead of getting to the cause of the overeating, which is the ridiculous over-restriction. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard headspace to get into, but once you can take a step back and like, right, if I just don't over-restrict Monday to Thursday, the likelihood is I'm not going to overeat Thursday to Monday. So that's what you need to do to break that cycle. You need to stop the over-restriction, because that's what's causing the overindulgence.
It is a really horrible, horrible vicious cycle. And my friend Charlotte used to come around to my flat, and she would open the kitchen cupboards and she would say, there's nothing in here. And I would say, because I can't trust myself. So if I wanted to eat, I would go to the supermarket and get what I wanted to eat. And it is, and if I overindulged, I beat myself up, and it's horrible. But actually, another quote you shared, which I love, is, I think it's Kevin Kelly one, it's much easier to change how you think by changing your behavior than it is to change your behavior by changing how you think. And I think that
it's
really
so good, isn't it?
It really, for me, just nails on the head the difference between how I thought previously and how I think now, where it's like, I'm going to trust my behaviors to get me to where I want to be, rather than if I think really, really hard and want it really, really a lot. That kind of has been the shift.
Yeah. And I think that just encourages, or to me, that quote encourages action. Mm-hmm. And not, you might know my mindset's not great. I have a, you know, poor relationship with exercise or food or something, but actually sometimes if you're kind of delaying taking the action by being like, I need to sort my mindset out first. And like, well, actually part of like doing these actions is sorting out your mindset. So say you're over-exercising and you're like, right, I need to sort my mindset out around over-exercising first. Actually, if you just, you know, reduce your sessions because you know that's what you need to do, and you start actioning it, that also flips into your mindset. I'm not saying don't work on mindset, but I'm saying they go hand in hand a little bit there.
That's like adaptive neurogenesis, isn't it? It's like the equivalent of adaptive thermogenesis.
Yeah.
Kind of figuring, like, your brain adapting to your action and the way that your body responds. That's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, is motivation, is your biggest thing getting people off the roller coaster and getting them onto the steady?
Yeah. And it's not a very sexy sell, but how I try and, I mean, because essentially, I want this to be, when someone works with me, the last diet they ever need, the last sort of thing they ever do. And most people who come to me have done Weight Watchers, Slimming World, keto, like they've tried everything and they've yo-yoed their whole life. And it just seems to them like the next thing. And I'm like, I want you to come at this with a different mindset so that it's not yo-yoing anymore. Like, this is meant to be maintainable. It's meant to be enjoyable. And so that's kind of the approach I take, is that I'm trying to sell maintenance. I'm not trying to sell you'll lose X amount in 8 weeks. And it's not to say that you actually can't get incredible results in 8 weeks, but it's just this like flipping the mindset of why you're doing it, how you're doing it, and that it's not a finite period of time. It's, these are changes that we want you to make ongoing. And this time you're going to be empowered and supported ongoing as well. And you're going to have the education so that you know exactly what you're doing and why it's getting results, as opposed to just being like, here's a meal plan. And then as soon as you get bored and can't stick to that meal plan anymore, you're like, well, no idea how that works or what was going on. Instead, it's like, okay, like, how are we going to incorporate the foods that you enjoy? How are we going to make sure that you can still eat with your family? How are we going to make sure that if you're traveling for work, you can deal with that? Because these are things that are going to happen in your life. Don't, again, put your life on pause for this period of time, because that's only ever going to be a quick fix. We have to make sure that it can fit into your life, not that you're trying to fit your life around this diet. So and of course, like, there are compromises, as there are to like achieving anything, but really that's the mindset that people need to take if they want to maintain their results and get off this on-off dieting, yo-yo dieting kind of mentality.
There's a different reaction to this kind of conversation that I hadn't been aware of until quite recently. And if you're comfortable to go here, let's go here. But it's about the way in which even just talking about health and fitness and the desire to want to lose weight, if that is indeed what is appropriate for that individual, how that can be quite triggering, and how I've sort of tiptoed around it by talking about, you know, the 95% of diets fail, because that's something that's being used as, I don't want to engage in this. Stop telling me to do this because I know it doesn't work. Here's the data. Is that for you, is that a relatively new manifestation in terms of people's attitude to diet and exercise? Because it does, it feels new to me, but maybe that's because I'm not in the industry in the way that you are.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because within my industry and within what I do, I'm not telling anyone to lose weight. Like, people are coming to me saying, I need some help to do this. Yeah. And I don't think there are, like, I mean, I think there's some potential problems with weight stigma from doctors, although I'd say it probably comes from a good place of, I know that if you lose weight, this is going to help your current condition. And that's why I'm suggesting that you do it. But from like a fitness industry perspective, like, no one's really telling anyone to lose weight. Like, I think it's almost a bit of a straw man argument. Like, I'm not out there being like, all of you people need to lose weight. Like, no, like, people will, if that's part of their goal, great, I can help you do that. But yeah, I sometimes think like, I get the whole cultural norms or societal norms of, let's idealize women who are very slim, and I'm pretty against most social norms. I'm like, do what you want. And do you know what? I don't have any problem with anyone being overweight. Like, it's nothing to do with me. It's people's own choices, and if they want some help with that and they want to improve their health, I'm obviously, that's part of what I do. But I do think that sometimes, and especially recently, like, when even doctors are given airtime about how fat doesn't impact your health, and that just simply isn't true. Like, there's a huge healthy body fat range. There's not, you don't need to be excessively lean. You don't need to, you know, look like a personal trainer or look like a fitness model. No one's saying that. But like, the complications of storing excess body fat are very real. And my worry for for this sort of body positivity movement or the fat acceptance movement, it's nothing to do with how anyone looks. Like, that, I don't care about that at all. It's more the impact on their health going forward, because a lot of the time, especially younger people, like, you won't see the impact on your health now. You don't have type 2 diabetes now, but these diseases take years to progress. And I worry that people will look back and be like, well, I was told that, you know, storing more body fat didn't have health complications. Now I have type 2 diabetes and now I have to deal with this, or now I'm at higher risk of cardiovascular disease, or, like, God forbid, I've had a heart attack. Like, I just think we need to still be real with the messaging there. And I mean, there's different ways of approaching this. It doesn't all have to be about weight. I mean, a much bigger indicator of how healthy you're going to be long-term is how active you are, how fit you are, how healthy you are. So maybe we focus on that more. If you're fit, healthy, active, great. Let's focus on that. Let's push that message and make it less about weight. And realistically, as a byproduct, you might lose a bit of weight, but that's not the focus. But I do worry a little bit that people are going to be unaware and kind of have their blinkers on and not want to hear the messages that actually storing too much body fat does have health complications, and there's really no way around that.
Yeah, I've got some wonderful people in the Facebook group who I know will skip past this particular episode because they've told me that they do when I talk about health and fitness and weight in this way. But I basically was quizzing one of them the other day, and she's so brilliant in how she sort of gets me to see her point of view, to be honest. Like, I really enjoy chatting to her. And it was essentially, you don't know what my health records are. nobody has any business telling me how healthy I am based on what my weight looks like to you with your eye. And then there's also the other side of it, which was I had noticed people had started identifying as fat, which was completely new to me. And this probably shows my age, but I just absolutely hadn't ever seen it as a thing, as seeing it as an identity. It was certainly not something I would have embraced. And when I quizzed another member of the group, they said, because I don't want somebody to call me fat as a negative, so I call myself fat, as I identify as fat as a positive. And I, as you say, I fully support their choice to be whoever they are and what have you. But there is always that caveat of, but there is the data about the health. So
yeah. And I don't know if it's just like pulling wool over. Like, I agree with her to an extent. Like, we don't know. I mean, there are slim people who are also unhealthy. It's and health is multifactorial, and there's mental health and there's physical health, but it is undeniable the link between storing too much body fat, cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, risk of certain cancers. Like, there is a lot of data on that. And that's not to say that everyone who's overweight will experience that, but they have a much higher risk. And that's something that, you know, and it's not like, it's not our place, it's not anyone's place to judge someone on that. But I think that people should know, just in the same way that if I smoked, I didn't really, you know, like, people shouldn't judge me for the fact that I smoke. I should be aware of the health risks for me. So it's not really a judgment thing or a shame thing or anything. It's just, I think people should be aware of that. And it's interesting that I have noticed that it's become a bit more popular to call yourself fat. And in some ways I like that, because it is making the word more acceptable, and like, it's not a negative, it's not a bad thing. And I don't think fat should have all these connotations. It's just, I have some excess energy. Cool. It's not very interesting, but sure. Like, it's one of the many things about me. Cool. I just don't see that as a big deal. And if people want to call themselves fat, I don't know if you follow the fat doctor who's obviously called herself fat.
Yeah.
So she's obviously quite outspoken about a lot of these things, which again, I think is quite worrying, because she's a doctor. So she has that level of authority and trust that people would give, and quite worrying messages, in my opinion.
Well, it's interesting. I've just finished reading Jenny Murray's book called Fat Cow, Fat Chance. And she essentially says that fat shaming is the only form of discrimination that for which there is no penalty.
That is interesting.
Because racial discrimination, sexual discrimination, any kind of discrimination, there are consequences. But if you roll down your window and call somebody a fat cow in the street, ain't nothing going to happen to you.
Do you think that that is because it's, and I'm not saying it is or isn't, but do you think that's because it's not seen as a choice? Sorry, it is seen as a choice.
Yeah, I think that's the stigma, isn't it? I think, and because there's a lot of science that backs that up, is you can't change your sexuality, you can't change the color of your skin, your ethnicity, but you can have an influence, shall we say, on your weight. But it's much more complicated, because as we've discussed, as I have experienced, like, I cannot tell you, I'd wake up every morning hoping. From the age of 9, every time I blew out the candles on my birthday cake, my wish was to be thin. So it has occupied my thoughts and feelings for such a long time. So I absolutely know what it's like to have someone comment on your weight in the street and almost want to say, it's not my fault, because I genuinely am thinking about it a lot and I want it so much. It's not happening. And it was arming myself with information. And again, as you said, taking a step back from me and just looking at it almost objectively, I was able to get perspective.
There are loads of like, and none of this stops you losing weight, but it doesn't, it's like, it's privilege of having like certain genes that don't predispose you to putting on weight. Certain socioeconomic backgrounds that make it easier for you to, you know, pick and choose your diet and what food is available to you. And there are loads of factors that go into someone's weight. And I'm certainly not saying it's anyone's like fault for being overweight, but I guess that just that notion that there isn't a penalty for that, I guess might come from the fact that it's seen as a choice in a way that you know, the color of your skin isn't seen as a choice.
Mm. Yeah, it's really interesting. Her book, listeners, and I don't know if you've, I think it's only just out recently, but it's really brilliant. And again, it's her journey in emotional eating and having a disordered relationship with food and all of that. It's really, really fascinating. And it's really good to have as many voices out there explaining why it can be so complicated, because it really is.
And I actually really, I'm really interested in listening to the anti-diet messages and to, you know, messages on the other side, and to hear, I mean, not that I'm against anti-diet, but just to hear both sides of the argument, because actually usually both sides have some pretty valid points and it's somewhere in the middle that the kind of the truth lies.
Do you know what's funny? A few weeks ago, I had Davinia Taylor on the podcast, and during the conversation, she said, because of her issues with being obese, and she said that she felt so terrible and that obesity is a slow death. And that generated quite a strong reaction. And I was given a lot of reading material by people via DM who were like, you need to read this, you need to read that. And Emma, I am diligently going through every book. So I was told to read Joshua Woolrick. I was told to read What We Don't Talk About When We Talk About Fat by Aubrey Gordon. I'm reading Fat as a Feminist Issue. So listeners, if you message me because you were disappointed, trust me, I'm working my way through those books.
But that's so impressive. And it says so much about you that you're, you know, open to both sides. And I do think that one problem with books is those are all quite biased. Like, they're one side of a narrative, right? And you only, and I know this because obviously I've read books before, but I remember reading a certain book about, this was years ago, but I think it was called like Sugar Nation or something. And it basically convinced me that sugar was like the devil and blah, blah, blah. And I remember
worse than crack cocaine, Emma.
Yeah, like literally the worst thing ever. And I remember my mom just saying, but Emma, you're not type 2 diabetic. And I was like, oh yeah. Like you get so lost in like one person's narrative. And this is true often with like solo podcasts as well, where no one's like questioning one thought process. You're only giving evidence for your own, like, I very much doubt there's like, this is like an anti-diet message, but actually people who diet also get these benefits, and actually like these are the problems with fat, with having too much fat, and blah, blah. So normally they're quite one-sided, but then again, that's why you read so many books, right? That's why you listen to people on both sides of an argument.
Yeah, which I think, and actually one of the reasons why I was so keen to read all those books is because obviously we're drawn into our own echo chamber. We're drawn into the places where we find ourselves and where we agree. And those are probably books I wouldn't have picked up had I been left on my own devices. So I really, really always appreciate my listeners' input. And it has opened my eyes up, it has made me think, I don't agree with that. And that has sort of consolidated my feelings about that. So that's fine. But I do think it's important to see all sides. But I think it's been an education.
It is hard. But I guess that's how you come up with your own opinion rather than just regurgitating other people's opinion. I've looked at both sides. From what I know, this is what I think at the moment. That might change if I keep, you know, if I'm open to new information occurring. And that's part of being a good human in many ways, that yeah, like this is my opinion at the moment, but it might change.
And that's why I'm really glad I found your feed, and that's why I'm really glad to have had you on the show, because I really do think, as I said right at the top, you come from a position of expertise. You've obviously studied really hard and you know your topic inside out and back to front, but you also really appreciate that the person in front of you who says that they have a certain kind of goal might have a whole load of obstacles, emotional, invisible obstacles that have been preventing them from getting there first. And you actually try and help them step over all of those before you actually get to what maybe they say they want. And then maybe you find that along the way, their intention has changed. And I love the way you talk about people connecting and sort of you see their self-worth increase when you work with people, because actually it's about the accountability they have with themselves, and they set themselves a goal and they meet it, and it just makes them feel incredible. Yeah. And the results are kind of secondary.
Yeah. And I think you see this a lot with confidence and people who think that they're more confident because they look a certain way. Like, you might feel more confident now because you've lost weight, but it's probably less to do with how you look now and more to do with you struggled with something your whole life and now you've achieved it. And like, how proud of yourself are you? How much confidence does that give you that you have said that you're going to do something and then you showed up for yourself and you followed through and you did it? that's what gives you the confidence. It's less like the weight loss is like always a byproduct to really what you're achieving. And so many people just attribute it to, oh, I lost this weight and now I'm so much more confident.
Do you know what's funny? For a long time on Instagram, you would only see me from sort of here up. And then gradually the camera would pan out a little bit. And people started asking me, oh my gosh, you've lost weight. But actually most of the messages I started to get and probably still get is, you just look happier. You just look more confident. And you're totally right. It's about the fact now my kitchen cupboards aren't empty because I don't distrust myself around food. And all of those things, it's about,
like
not
that's
about
the
number on the scale.
Bit. Yeah. Like the fact that you can have food in your house and not feel like it's, you know, that you're always thinking about it. And I guess you've been speaking a lot about how much weight impacted your thoughts from the age of 9. And now, like, how much more brain power do you have that's not always at the forefront of your mind, that you have, you know, all the rest of those thoughts now to fill up with, you know, much more interesting things.
Like conversations with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Will you let listeners know where they can find you? And because they can sign up for various courses, but you also just your Instagram and your, sound like a pensioner now.
Website.
Your internet address. That's it.
My internet address is esgfitness.co.uk and my Instagram is at esgfitness.
It has been such a pleasure to chat to you. I could chat to you for another 5 hours very, very easily, but let's not do that to our listeners on this first. You just have to come back. It's been such a treat to chat to you. And listeners, obviously the links will be in the show notes, but thanks so much for joining me, Emma. It's been a joy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I do hope you enjoyed it. I appreciate your time hugely. If you did enjoy it and you never want to miss an episode, then please do hit the subscribe button wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. It's also where you get the opportunity to leave a 5-star review and a rating for how you feel about the show. And I'd be so grateful if you wouldn't mind leaving one. If you want to get in touch with me, email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Or you can DM me on Instagram and Twitter, where I am at Emma Gunns. If you fancy chatting to me and thousands of other fellow listeners of the podcast, then click the link to join the Facebook forum. The link to join is in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. You have to answer a couple of questions, but we cannot wait to see you there. Come over and join the conversation. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you on the next one.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.